Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn, and joining me today is a very special guest. Please welcome Rebecca Kiesling-Herman. Rebecca, you live in Michigan. You are an attorney, you're an activist, and you are doing some great work. You have a story to tell, and I don't want to tell it for you. I want you to be able to tell your story, and then we will get into how that led you to be such a great activist in protecting human life. So welcome to Calibrate Conversations.
Thank you. Well, I was adopted and actually raised in a secular, atheist, Jewish family, although I was sent to 5 years of Hebrew school and I had a bat mitzvah. But I had, you know, struggles with questions of identity, like who am I? Why am I here? And I wanted to meet my birth mother. I wanted to find my roots and where I fit into God's plan, if at all. So at 18, I petitioned for my non-identifying information. Because I was born before 1980, I couldn't just find out who my birth mother was. There was a long process, and I had to submit it to a central registry and wait to see if she did the same. And when I received my information, it had all kinds of details about her, lots and lots of details, but all it said for my biological father was that he was Caucasian and of large build. And of course, I thought that sounds like a police description. So I called my caseworker and asked her, was my mom raped? And she said, yeah, I didn't want to tell you. I was devastated. That definitely set me, spinning, trying to figure out what does this mean for my life? I knew what people said about abortion in cases of rape. I felt very much targeted and devalued by society. But I was still determined to meet my birth mother. I wanted to hear that there was a mistake, that maybe that this was not how I was conceived, and that she didn't want to abort me. But at 19, she wanted to meet me, sent me a beautiful letter. We had a wonderful reunion, but when I asked her about abortion, she told me that if abortion had been legal in Michigan at the time, that she would have aborted me.
Wow.
And then later, she shared with me that she actually went to 2 illegal abortions and I was almost killed. But the Michigan law protected me, and that's why she backed out.
And so, thankfully, that was, about 3 years before Roe versus Wade? So that's when the law was still there to protect you.
It was 4 years before Roe. Right. It was January 69 when she sought to kill me. And I was born exactly 3.5 years to the date of Roe v. Wade, before the date. I was born July 22nd, 1969.
So how did you work through that as your, just with your identity and value and feeling valuable as a human and as a child of God, knowing the circumstances that you were conceived in and how society views that?
Well, I would say that, my adoptive parents did not give me a foundation for dealing with this truth. And they were also very abusive. Hmm. My dad broke my nose when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
And so, my adoption story was very much infertility centered. There was no sort of big picture worldview that was telling me that God had special plans for my life. My takeaway was that I was there to meet my parents' infertility and make them feel whole. by having a family. So I kind of determined that I was going to prove my worth to people, that if I could make myself attractive and successful, people would think, oh, look at her, you know, clearly she deserved the chance to be born, you know, clearly she shouldn't have been aborted. You know, that didn't get me very far. I ended up jumping into relationships because I really just wanted to find someone. I was desperate to find someone who would love me. And I was hoping that I could start my own family and make things right. And I ended up in abusive relationships. I was beat up by a boyfriend I attended law school with. Lost my front tooth. He broke my jaw. And it was after that that someone invited me to church. And the first time I was invited to church, I was 15, and at an altar call, I did accept Christ. But after about 9 months, I felt betrayed by my church friends, fell away, although I would pray to God to get me out of whatever situation I got myself into. I believed, but I wasn't living the life. I wasn't bearing fruit. And I would say I was far from God. So, someone invited me back to church, and I immediately gave my heart back over to Christ. And it was through scripture that I began to learn who I am, that, you know, I'm not a child of the rapist. I'm a child of God, that the rapist did not create me. God created me in his image, not the rapist's image. And he created me for a purpose, which was for good and not for evil, and definitely not for the purpose of being aborted, which somebody once told me that. A Christian once told me that.
Yeah, we have so many just misconceptions, and we stigmatize people so much. And I love that you are made in the image of God, not in the image of the rapist. And so that was able to inform your identity and help you build a healthy identity on who God says that you are.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I felt a strong sense of purpose because my life had been spared. I had been protected. And I feel like the most selfish thing I could do would be to not look back to want to save others. And, you know, I feel a sense of obligation to, you know, sort of pay it forward. And, you know, there's nothing that's extra special about me more than others that says that I deserve to be born and all these others didn't. And I know that they're just as deserving. And so I do what I can to try to help rape victims who are pregnant. As an attorney, I represent them pro bono. I have a global organization, a Christian organization called Save the One, with a network of over 1,300 of us who were conceived in rape and mothers who became pregnant by rape. And then we also have hundreds who were told by doctors to abort.
Wow. So that is amazing. We'll link that in the show notes and on all of the, you know, social media. So if you connect with your organization, where do you come up with Save the One? What meaning does that name have?
It actually has a dual meaning. Sadly, in the police movement in the United States, the majority voice of pro-life leaders is that you save the 99 in exchange for the one.
Mm-hmm.
And they accept the rape exception. They endorse rape exception politicians. So that's why we have rape exception legislation being introduced. I'm from Michigan, where we had never had a rape exception in a single law, because Right to Life of Michigan said, you know, we don't play that game. You know, we're not going to engage in child sacrifice, because that's what it is when you throw the child conceived in rape onto the altar. You know, that's child sacrifice. And Jesus said, See that you do not despise any of these little ones, for I tell you their angels in heaven always look upon the face of my Father in heaven. And he goes into the whole parable of the lost sheep, and he explains how the good shepherd leaves the 99 to save the one. And he explains the point of that parable, and he says, for in the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish, and neither should we. So in context, he was talking about the little ones who are despised, who are at risk of being killed. And if he's not willing, why should any Christian be willing?
Yes. And so, unfortunately, much of the pro-life movement has compromised on that. And then what that compromise and making those exceptions is just teaching the world is it's building that stigma of like, well, those babies are less valuable. Those babies are expendable. And that actually adds to the stigma and to the just dehumanizing. Children can see it in rape when they say, well, we want to protect all babies except for those. And what a horrible way of viewing God's creation. As you've walked alongside now, you know, you have this network of hundreds of people who are conceived in rape. Now, I'd be curious. I wouldn't imagine that any of them would say, oh, yeah, I wish that my mom had aborted me. Right. Like, and we always, I always hear that, especially from the more pro-abort side. It's like, well, no one would want to be born in the circumstances in which they're, you know, unwanted or whatever. But it's like, I never been actually hear that from people who have been, who are alive saying, oh, my circumstances were hard, so I wish that my mom had aborted me. It's like, no, like that's just not the case. Maybe those people are out there, but I certainly never hear of those people.
Yeah. And there's a lot of women in our organization who had abortions, either forced abortions, because rapists and child molesters love abortion. Sex traffickers love abortion.
Absolutely.
And they deeply regret it. And they talk about how it was more violence in their body, which just further traumatized them. And, you know, why would anyone think that more violence brings healing? It does not.
That's the last thing that a rape victim needs is more violence, and then to have to add that next layer of just regret and pain onto their life.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we get called things like rapist child, monstrous child. Do you know how painful that is for these rape victims? And by the way, rape victims have half the rate of abortion as the average unplanned pregnancy.
Because, again,
they don't want more violence. And the adoption rate is 25% for rape victims and for the average population, it's only 1% placed for adoption. And so they're mostly choosing adoption instead of abortion, and 50% choose, more than 50% choose to parent. And they grieve deeply every time they hear someone call their child the rapist child, like as if he should have parental rights, as if the child belongs to him after everything she's been through. You're going to insult her child and hurt her with those words?
Yes.
You know, I'm the child of a rape victim, and most importantly, a child of God.
Yes. So we have to change that narrative to give everyone equal protection under the law, but see everyone as equal as children of God, and not, and that's what our laws have allowed. And unfortunately, you know, many pro-lifers have allowed that and gone along with that, of perpetuating this narrative that those kids are unworthy and somehow different, that we need to continue to educate and sway people's hearts.
And there's a couple of places in the Old Testament where it talks about that you're not to punish the child for the sins of the father.
Yes, absolutely.
And that teaches it to be punished for their own sin. And interestingly, the U.S. Supreme Court in Coker v. Georgia, I'm an attorney, so I'll get all legal on you. In Coker v. Georgia, the U.S. Supreme Court said that rapists don't deserve the death penalty. And the second case of Kennedy v. Louisiana, they said that even for child molesters, it is cruel and unusual punishment. So then how does the innocent child deserve to die for his crime?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I think that this would be a good moment to pause, and I want to play a video. This video is how I first found you. Thankfully, the algorithm gods online popped this into my newsfeed. And when I watched, it's like, this is one of the most remarkable responses to this issue I've ever seen. And so you do public advocacy, and this clip was from one of your speaking engagements. So I want to play this as an example of what it looks like to respond with grace and logic, and in a way that actually did sway someone's heart. So let's watch this, and then we'll dissect it a little bit.
So how did I deserve to die for the crime of the man who raped my mother?
Speechless.
How did you deserve to die? You're right there.
I'm confused.
That's because the law protected me. I was born exactly 3.5 years to the date of Roe v. Wade. My birth mother went to 2 illegal abortions, and I was almost killed, but she backed out because of the law and fear for her own safety. She told me if it had been legal, she absolutely would have aborted me. And 6 years later, she changed her mind about abortion, like many women do. But I literally owe my birth to the law, which protected me. So I'm asking you, how did I deserve to die for the crime of the man who raped my mother?
Well, at that point in time, you were still, you know, in your mother's belly, and she had all control over you because you're a part of her body. And if she wanted you removed, that's her choice. I'm glad that you're here today. Like, you survived. Congratulations. But it's still her choice. And it doesn't matter about if there was a law there to save you. Like,
see,
if she wanted to, she could have. And that's it.
So I value you as a person, and I can tell you I'm so glad you're here, honestly, and I'm so glad you're alive. I'm so glad you were born. But what I'm hearing you say is that if you had your way, I'd be dead right now. Because my birth mother's choice, her choice, was to kill me. And the law protected me. And the question is, did I deserve the protection I received?
Fuck yeah.
Thank you. It's okay. You can take your time, I guess.
All right. What a remarkable exchange, and your composure and your grace and your clarity. But you made it so clear that you are alive because the law protected you. And we need laws to protect every single human life without exception. You know, 14th Amendment equal protection is that we shouldn't have laws that protect some but not others. And then that's biblical. The Bible tells us, Old Testament, not to pass laws that show partiality, that protects some people but not others. And so you are on the forefront of being an advocate for that 1% that we've been willing to compromise on, that we shouldn't be compromising on.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. How can we support rape victims? I feel like so many times, you know, because of this cultural narrative, I can't imagine what it's like to be in their shoes, obviously. I've never been in their shoes. You know, I had, you know, some sexual abuse in my past, but it wasn't, you know, that, because I'm, you know, a guy. But I can't imagine what it's like to be in those shoes. But I feel like there's so much cultural pressure that most women would feel this cultural pressure, like, oh, I should get an abortion because, you know, that's what society expects. But, you know, it was refreshing for you to say that many of them are choosing adoption instead of abortion. But how can we support them? How can we walk alongside them, love them, encourage them, and value the life that is, you know, growing inside of them?
Well, if you happen to know somebody who becomes pregnant by rape, I have advice on our website, Save the One. We have a blog, and I have a blog that is, if you search Rebecca Kiesling advice for clergy, you'll find it. And it's
cool. We'll put that in our notes, and so people can find it on YouTube on the link below.
It's all scripture based. And people might think, well, that's really obscure. When am I going to meet somebody like that? Well, it's a lot more prevalent than you would think. You know, the number of women who are raped is just sky high, and it just keeps growing. One in three women will be raped. College students will be raped before they graduate from college. And 6% of rape victims become pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And like I said, two studies, only 15 to 25% abort, compared to over 50% of the rest of women abort. Wow. In unplanned
pregnancy. That is actually really shocking to me. And so that is really, really shocking. But I'm thankful that fewer of them are choosing it. I wish that they didn't have the choice at all. But I'm thankful that fewer of them are choosing abortion. But that we want to help them and support them, you know, in whatever circumstances that they're in.
And there's a book called I Never Called It Rape. And it followed and interviewed a couple hundred women. And it explained how difficult it is for a rape victim to even say the R word, to acknowledge what had been done to her. And it's very common that they don't engage in self-care after being raped, and they vow never to tell another soul. And what the abortion does is it makes sure they never tell anybody. But when they are going through with the pregnancy, that's when they have to open up, and they're able to get the healing that they never would have otherwise received, because they would have just ate all that pain themselves with the second trauma of the abortion. And so if you actually know somebody who is pregnant by rape, first of all, affirm her that she matters, and that this child is like a little angel to keep her company during her time of healing. That's what many, many rape victims say. We have tons of blogs. We have over 300 blogs on Save the One, many of them written by rape victims who became pregnant. And the rainbow after the storm, there's the scripture verse, what man meant for evil, God can use for good. That's the story of Joseph. And we affirm that she is capable of great love, and that she will make an awesome mother to this child, and that the child is not a horrible reminder, but a reminder that God can bring beauty from ashes. And then, you know, walk her through. Sadly, we have a couple of blogs written by women who were told by clergy to abort. Actually, three of them women wrote blogs, and they were told by clergy to abort. One of them even took her to get the morning after pill. And as a Christian, the woman herself decided not to, because she knew that there could have been conception already. And, you know, she was pregnant and did end up having the baby. So it's very important that if you're a Christian to, and especially a teacher, to reaffirm who that child is and that God has special plans for that child's life and for her life. And, you know, God didn't cause the evil, but he can make good things happen out of evil. And again, he trades the beauty for ashes. And then I would say, just, you know, be there for her because she may have material needs. And if you know a single mom who, you know, became pregnant by rape, be there, help out. You know, some of them, they're not going to have the opportunity to have a college fund for their child. You know, help out in any way you can.
A lot of physical needs that we can help with.
And most of them try to, you know, keep the rapists out of their lives. And I've worked hard on the Rape Survivor Found Custody Act. I'm behind that law.
And so tell us about that, because you really do a lot of advocacy to make sure that the rape victim is protected from the rapist. And part of that is making sure that the rapist doesn't have parental rights. And so what is that part of your advocacy look like?
Well, Obama signed our law, the Rape Survivor Child Custody Act, which gives an incentive to states to pass the law. They'll get more funds for rape victim advocacy. I've represented numerous women who terminate parental rights of rapists pro bono. If they're not in Michigan, I help find an attorney from another state oftentimes, or I help them to lobby. I teach them how to try to get this law passed in their state. Right now, it's going through the state of California and got passed unanimously in committee in both the essentially their House and their Senate. And I, you know, I coach them what to do to be able to get this law introduced. So, you know, and anybody can help advocate for that. You don't have to be someone who became pregnant by rape.
And I feel like it's something where, you know, a lot of people listening might say, it's like, oh, I've never known someone who, you know, got pregnant by rape. It's like, well, you probably just didn't know that that was the how they got pregnant. And so we shouldn't wait until that situation just falls in our lap. We need to be, you know, ready and changing the narrative and doing what we can to help any, you know, victims and be an advocate for protecting life. And we can do that if we, you know, even if we don't personally know someone's circumstances right now. And when we have a voice of compassion and grace and kindness and valuing life, that probably makes it more likely that those people in those circumstances will come to us. When they see that we are already a voice that is valuing life and will love them and protect them and, you know, help them in whichever ways that we can.
That's absolutely true, because oftentimes all the voices of people immediately surrounding them are telling them, abort, abort, abort. You couldn't possibly love this child. And so when they see, like on social media, that one of their friends, maybe their friend from high school, you know, cares about this issue, that's who they reach out to because they know that that's a safe person who can actually help them. Well, a lot of these rape victims choose to try to keep the rapist out of their life as much as possible, and oftentimes don't even tell him about the pregnancy. And so, you know, offering to babysit for her child is something that you can do. You know, give her a night
filling the
out.
Gap. It's like these kids, they need a father figure in their life. They need Christians. They need people loving them and investing in them. And, you know, we know that this isn't God's ideal in how to start a family. And so we as Christians need to fill those gaps that are created by someone's sin. Just as if the father was in prison or just out of the picture for any reason, there are so many kids who need good, loving grandparent or parental type people in their life. And so we as the church need to step in and fill those gaps and be those people.
And there's some women who don't have family that's either alive or who support them or who are in state. And so offering to have them come over for the holidays is huge. My children were raised where we would have guests for the holidays regularly. My kids would say it wasn't a holiday if we didn't have guests, and I had five children. And we would always invite people who didn't have family who was local, and single moms. And that's a way that you have a chance to model a family, a godly family, when they see at the holidays everyone praying together and everyone coming together.
Yes. And that's just the life that God calls us to as Christians, bearing one another's burdens. All right, we are running out of time. Do you have any closing thoughts? What are some steps that people can take to be an advocate for the preborn? We need to advocate for laws that give them, you know, equal protection along with every other child that deserves to be protected. What are resources? You've already talked about your website, Save the One. We will link that in the show notes. What are some closing thoughts or encouragement that you can leave us with?
Well, there are a lot of websites you can follow, and you know, figures in the pro-life movement like Abby Johnson, Lila Rose, Live Action, Students for Life of America. And then there were NARN, which is to help get people out of the abortion industry.
Yes.
But I want to talk about the video, because I saw like the comments that people had in that video, and it's important to focus on trying to win hearts, not arguments. And there's a lot of people who want to learn how to debate. They want to debate people online, but it's very important to try to focus on winning hearts.
Yes. And you gave us a great example of doing that.
And be patient, and you know, use the speaker-listener technique like I did, where you said, what I'm hearing you say is, and you give them an opportunity to respond. And reflecting back what they're saying shows value to them. It demonstrates value to them. And then one little thing that I do regularly that a lot of people have commented on is, you know, whenever I hear that it's someone's birthday or see on Facebook it's their birthday, I'll tell them, happy birthday. I'm so glad you were born. And it's amazing how many people will say, thanks so much. Nobody's ever said that to me.
Oh, wow.
Dad, I get to hear that a lot because people know my story and they'll say it spontaneously. Oh, my gosh, I'm so glad you were born. But there's everybody needs to hear that. And so it touches people when you say that, because that's what birthdays are for. It's celebrating the fact that you got to be born. And that's one little thing that you can do regularly.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So encourage people, love people well, seek to engage their hearts and sway their hearts. And you've done a wonderful job of providing an example of that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. And for everyone listening, I pray that you can get involved in protecting every single human life, not you know, just protecting the 99, but actually going after the one. And so we need to be advocates of that. We need to give them, you know, equal protection under the law and use the law to protect them. But then we also love people. It's not one or the other. We love people. We sway their hearts. We advocate for laws that protect innocent human life. And we do what we can as Christians to bear one another's burdens, to love all people. And so I hope that today is a reminder of the calling we have from Christ to do that. So go to savetheone.com for more resources from Rebecca and get involved. Help change the narrative. Help the world see that every human life is precious and made in the image of God and worth protecting. All right. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you share this video. Hit the like button. Leave a nice comment if you'd be so kind. And go to calibrateministries.com for more episodes and resources. Thank you.